Both our features this week are linked to the Queen's Jubilee. The first was written by UEA lecturer Michael Nash. He observes that the way a person presents themselves is important, and that is clearly true for a head of state. The feature is read by Lynette Edwards.
Queen Elizabeth II has been fulfilling the role of head of state for 70 years, and during that time her presentation as a symbol of the nation and as a person in her own right, she has necessarily changed, gradually, sometimes imperceptibly. For a man as head of state, clothing options are limited, unless he's a sharp dresser, which is unlikely. The dark suit and the uniform are the only options, and may be relieved by ties, buttonholes and medals. Some men may have natural advantages in good looks. For a woman as head of state, the options are quite different. They may seem endless with changing fashions, different dresses and designers, especially if they're backed up, as in the case of the Queen, with the greatest collections of jewels in the world. Of course, there can be pitfalls. Heads of state are not actresses or celebrities, no matter how photogenic. The Queen is the most photographed person in history. Her great natural advantage is that she loves being Queen and never forgets who she is. One can never please all the people all the time, but one can please most of the people most of the time, and the Queen has achieved this. The result is generally success, especially when she appears at evening functions. No film star ever achieves the grace and style of our Sovereign Lady. At the beginning of her reign, the Queen inherited Norman Hartnell as her designer and Cecil Beaton as her photographer. They served her well. Hartnell was once asked, "Why isn't the Queen more with it?" To which he replied, "She doesn't need to be with it, she is it." That sums it all up. Beaton took stunning photographs of the coronation when there was a mistress of the robes. But later in the reign, two young men appeared who would take his place. Patrick Lichfield, the Queen's cousin, and Anthony Armstrong Jones, her brother-in-law. They too would serve her well. Lichfield photographing the Silver Jubilee, and Jones still being around to cover the Golden Jubilee. The other great parts in the art of presentation are, of course, played by painters. The Queen has sat for around 150 sittings over her years. Sometimes the time she has to give is quite short, at others quite long. The most iconic of these paintings is that by Pietro Annigoni, which defined the image of the Queen for several decades. Painted in 1955, it represents the Queen as a somewhat imperious Renaissance ruler with all the background attributes, dressed in the garter robes. It was the result of the Queen seeing some of his earlier work and expressing a wish that someday he would paint her. Such wishes usually come true. Portraiture is unique as three persons are involved: the painter, the sitter and the viewer. When the Queen was painted by the now disgraced Australian Rolf Harris, he talked to the Queen, something forbidden by etiquette but ignored by him. The Queen took it in her stride, and when he asked if she'd like the painter who painted her first as a child of seven, Philip de Laszlo, she replied, "No, he was horrid." This is surprising, as Laszlo was famously good with children. But the truth was, she was hot and disappointed because she'd been taken away from the birthday party of her grandmother, Queen Mary, in May 1933, and lost her usual composure. As an adult, she's never lost it in public, and will ask painters firstly, "With teeth or without?" Annigoni's portrait appeared on Maltese banknotes and leads one to remember that the Queen's face, of course, appears in all our coinage and all our banknotes and stamps. It is the law that it should be so. During a long reign, the face on the coinage changes, but in the present reign, it has changed only twice. At the present time, it shows a dignified lady in middle age and will last the reign out. Painting is a genre altogether different from photography, although they both follow and learn from each other. It has been suggested that the camera will replace the paintbrush, but this is unlikely as they make different contributions to presentation and royal patronage has been high in both. Queen Victoria favoured photography from its earliest days, Prince Albert being photographed in 1842, while the Queen favoured many photographers and even at the close of her reign, filmmakers. At the same time, she was painted by Winterhalter and Von Angeli, as everyone who was anyone was at that time. It may be difficult to paint the Queen. There's no guarantee of success. But a large ingredient in success is whether the Queen clicks with the painter. Are the two on the same wavelength? Her success with Antigone led to him painting her again 15 years later. With the great Lucian Freud, this must have happened too, as although the result was criticised by the art world, the Queen hangs it in her own gallery in Buckingham Palace. She is not a vain person, unlike her predecessor and namesake. She is open to all comers in the sense of another aspect, another variation. Perhaps the best representation in later times are the wonderful photographs of the American photographer Annie Leibovitz, showing the Queen in furs looking wistfully and thoughtfully out of Buckingham Palace windows, perhaps reflecting on her very long reign. Whatever the genre, the results over seven decades has been grace, style and taste. Even a crowned and anointed queen must have a confidant, and this for 38 years was her nanny and dresser, Margaret Bobbo MacDonald. Now it is Angela Kelly, who also, as dresser and confidant, has moved into Windsor Castle to be on hand for the Queen. These vital roles are at the centre of presenting the royal image to the world.
Thank you, Lynette.